Hello, everyone, and welcome to John Hacks History, a place where I want to share fascinating facts, inspirational stories, and of course, slight exaggerations. My name is John Rose, and it is the passion of my life to share the fascinating true stories about history, the Bible, international travel, and how to make sense of thousands and thousands of years of human history as it plays out in our life today. Let me tell you about my superpower. I love history. And throughout my life, I've not only studied it academically, I've read the books, and I've traveled to those special places that have historical significance. And everybody I know has always told me I have an ability to take these complex historical cultures and leaders and themes and make them easy to understand for quote-unquote normal people. I'm not good at math. I am horrible at anything mechanical. Don't even get me started on how bad I am at golf. But making history and travel easy to understand, that is my superpower, and I'm excited to make history easy to understand for you. Before I share my first fascinating fact with you, I want to tell you my story of how this whole interest and adventure began. Okay, a few years back, I am facing something that psychologists might call an existential crisis. I've turned 50 years old. I've been pastoring a church my wife and I started for a few years, and things are not going well. The church is kind of floundering. There's a lot of people that are choosing to leave the church. And on a regular basis, the church leadership has to get together and have a meeting on how we're going to repair the budget and keep the church doors open. And although nobody is willing to openly say it out loud, the real problem with the church is me. Now, when I get done with these incredibly difficult, depressing meetings, as I'm watching this church struggle to barely stay alive, I'm driving up to visit my father. My father has been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And every time I go up to see him, I have to kind of reintroduce myself to him. It's incredibly, incredibly sad season in life. I'm trying to raise a couple of kids. I'm trying to keep the mortgage paid. And I'm also feeling this sense deep down inside that I'm just not cutting it. We have another meeting, another adjustment of the budget. An adjustment for the budget in quotation marks means John has alienated a few more families. And my good friend Annette, after the meeting is over, she takes me aside and she says, "You know, you need to get away. You need to take a break, and you need to find out who Jesus is again." I, of course, because I'm such a mature, spiritual, thoughtful person, I drove home and told my wife, Annette's trying to steal the church from us. So I waited a month until the next leadership team meeting. We gathered together. I knew they were going to bring up the topic of the sabbatical, and the minute they brought it up, I said, "That won't work. That's not possible. We don't have enough money in the church for us to send me on a sabbatical. I need to stay here and protect this." Now, the funny thing is, this was like my version of "you can have this church when you grab it from my cold, dead fingers," which at this point was actually a real possibility. But then one of the most transitional moments of my life happened. That board wasn't looking to get rid of me. Each member on the board stood up and said how much they loved me. And one member of the board said, "My wife and I want to send you to France. You've talked about the Tizay community there, the monastery. We want to see you go back and rediscover your relationship with Jesus. Another member of the board stood up and said, "My wife and I love how much you love ancient history. We want to personally pay for you to go off to Israel. You go wherever you want, do whatever you want to do, but go walk where Jesus walked." And then finally, another board member stood up and said, "My wife and I want to fly your wife over to Rome. We're going to provide for someone to babysit for your kids so you and your wife can renew and strengthen your marriage." I walked out of that meeting pretty sure they weren't trying to get rid of me, but also ready for a new adventure and to discover Jesus out on the road. I'm almost a little embarrassed to confess to you, the first time I ever traveled internationally over to Europe, I was already 50 years old. Through planes, through trains, and then through a bus, I quickly found myself walking through a small countryside village in the south of France called Tizay, and walked up the hill to a place I had heard so much about, the Tizay community. The music of the Tizay community is overwhelmingly beautiful. It matches ancient Latin chants with more contemporary compositions, but they're all sung either with one instrument or 1,200 to 1,500 people from across the world singing in unison together in this echo chamber of a large old building. The first night after the service ended, I realized that God had met me there, and in profound ways, I began to unwind myself. I lived the monastic lifestyle for a week with the meals and meeting people from Germany, people from Japan, people from Spain, people from Canada, even a couple people from the United States. And the Holy Spirit permeated this community. But where I really found what I needed to find was when I went down the road to a place called Cluny. Cluny was one of the earliest sites. For a while, the Pope actually lived there. And it gave the story of the monastery there in Cluny. And as I looked at the timeline, I realized that even back in 900 AD, leading a church was hard. Being the people of God was hard. I looked at all of the struggles that that community had. And suddenly history spoke to me. And I realized I am just another part of God's unfolding story. And folks, it's always difficult. And folks, being a leader, walking the path that God has for you in life, there's always going to be difficult moments. That's the story of history. Here is why international travel is so important. Here is why inspirational sites that have spiritual significance or biblical significance are so impactful for us, is when we get out of our comfort zone, when we go on a journey and we're away from our family and all of the encumbrances that weigh us down, God is able to speak to us through history. We're able to hear his voice in the desperation and in the loneliness and in the solitude of traveling. And history speaks to us. In my experience, is historical places shout to us, and they give us courage to faithfully live out the lives that we're living and the struggles that we have, because we are part of a long story of the people that follow Jesus. We are living out and surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses that are watching us with our struggles. And when we remember that they had their struggles and they also had their victories, it gives us courage for the journey. My next stop on my existential tour was to Israel. And that amplifies exactly what I'm talking about. Growing up, we hear the stories about Jesus. I'm old enough to remember in the back of our Bibles, there would be black and white pictures of a fishing village called Capernaum, or of an oasis where King David might have hidden from King Saul. But you go to Israel and you walk the streets of the fishing village of Capernaum. Do you know almost with certainty there is a home in Capernaum that history tells us? Peter. Yeah, that Peter. It was his mother-in-law's house. People began worshiping there and venerating that site very early in history. You can actually go look. You can actually go look at a place where Jesus more than likely did a miracle. And you can go down to the south of Israel and go out to the desert, to the fascinating fortress of Masada built by Herod. And then just right next to that, there's Engedi, and Engedi is the wilderness where King David wrote so many of the Psalms. And you travel around Israel, and what used to be black and white pictures are now vivid color as you walk the roads and you see the sights. And it gives you a historical perspective to know that, yes, the Bible is true, and yes, these places are real places. And although oftentimes there's certain archaeological disputes, but so much of what is recorded in the Bible is accurately depicted. So much of what is in the Bible you can walk and see and breathe and smell. And it gives context and it gives depth to our lives. And then finally, after starting in France, traveling throughout Israel, I met my wife in Rome. Rome, the eternal city, the Colosseum. Rome, Mamertine prison, where we know almost with certainty that the Apostle Paul was imprisoned and wrote the last book of the Bible, and you can go into that jail cell. There's not multiple jail cells in the location where the Apostle Paul was kept. There is that jail cell. And history tells us that churches were begun there, and they do the dating of the candles and archaeology. And you walk on the Roman roads, which have the grooves of chariots. Can I stop and say that again? Your tennis shoes, your lucky Nikes, are walking on original Roman roads that have chariot grooves in them. And maybe outside of Rome, you go down into the catacombs where the first Christians would worship and would gather. Catacombs are subterranean caves used for burial, but also a site of worship historically. And as you look at the original frescoes painted on the walls or the carvings, you don't see a cross, but you see pictures of empty tombs, and you realize that the early church's story was the hope that is found in the resurrection of Jesus Christ, and that carries over 2,000 years as a witness. And when you return home, you are given courage to live out your life faithfully because you have been reminded by the ancients, the cloud of witnesses, that Jesus, in fact, rose from the dead, and they bore witness to it in their generation, and it is our season to bear witness in our generation. Then, our last stop before we returned home, we went up to Venice, Italy, as the boat was pulling us into St. Mark's Square. By the way, St. Mark's Square is what Napoleon called Europe's drawing room or Europe's living room. As we pulled into St. Mark's Square, there was a church that had a sign that said live performance of Vivaldi's Four Seasons. So I love classical music. We decided to go back that evening, but as I went to pay for the ticket to enter the church, this sweet old Italian woman wanted like 22 euros a person to go in and hear a concert of classic music. Now, I will pay that much for Lynyrd Skynyrd. I might pay that much if Rush got back together, but I kind of pause about whether or not I'm going to pay the 22-year-olds, probably $25 American, to hear a classical concert. And she looks at me, and in broken English, she essentially says, "You don't understand. They are performing the Four Seasons by Vivaldi in the church on the organ that he wrote this piece of music." And so that night, we sat in that church and listened to a piece of music in the room that it was written in back in 1720. And that is the thrill of travel. And that is History Hacked. So that, my friends, is how John Hacks History began. I'm looking forward into sharing future podcasts with you. The next one to be released is going to be called Roaming Rome, where we're going to talk about the Eternal City and all of the layers of history that we find when we go to Rome, Italy. I look forward to speaking with you then, and have a great day.